Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us. This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemist are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. Today my guest is Dr. Norman Marcus, who's a clinical and muscle pain research director of, I should say. So he is a pain specialist. He has a fantastic background. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Marcus.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
So could you give us your background, please?
Well, after attending medical school, I did an internship. In the old days, it was called like a rotating internship, where I went through the various aspects of what a doctor might do, and then decided to go on to do a residency in psychiatry. And when I was doing that, I became very interested in mind-body interaction. And following my residency, I did a fellowship in psychosomatic medicine. And while I was doing my fellowship, I was asked by the Department of Neurology at the headache unit where I was, which was at Montefiore Hospital, and they had the first headache unit in the world. And I was asked to join them and to start treating patients with headaches in the Department of Neurology. And at that time, I was interested in biofeedback and because of the whole issue of mind-body interaction. So I started to evaluate patients with headache and treat them with medication as well as the biofeedback. And at that time, I was elected president of the New York State Biofeedback Society. And then following a few years doing that, I was asked by the Department of Anesthesiology to start the first pain center in New York City in the Department of Anesthesiology. And I did that with a colleague, an anesthesiologist, Edith Kepish. And we together started and then ran together the pain center at Montefiore Hospital, which I did for approximately 7 years. And we had a multidisciplinary program where we're teaching patients how to manage their pain using nerve blocks at times and medication and psychological interventions and relaxation training. And then from there, I was asked by the Department of Medicine at Lenox Hill Hospital to start an inpatient pain treatment program, which I did and ran that for about 20 years, actually. And then while I was there, I was asked by the Princess Margaret Hospital in Windsor to start a pain center. And I started to travel to the UK 1 week a month for 3 years. And I have an appointment in the NHS, and I ran the pain center there. And while we were there, we got some significant publicity, and we were on the BBC, BBC Two, and we were on television and numerous radio programs, and we were able to help patients who had persistent pain. And by that time, I was starting to focus on soft tissue. And what had happened was that I was introduced to Hans Krauss, who was President Kennedy's physician for his back. And Hans Krauss had a technique and a conceptual model on assessing soft tissue pain, muscle pain. And the president at that time was being treated by another physician, Janet Travell, and she was injecting Kennedy actually 5 or 6 times a day into his muscles. And when Hans Krauss came in, he stopped the injections completely and said that the problem wasn't all the muscles that needed to be injected, but rather muscles that were very deconditioned, as well as maybe some muscles that needed injections, but to think of all muscles that are tender as a target for an injection, like dry needling or something like that, didn't make any sense. And he had a conceptual model where there were 4 reasons for muscle pain, tension being the number one, then deficiency, or otherwise known as weakness and or stiffness of key postural muscles. And then the third was spasm, which is involuntary contraction of the muscle, that, you know, you can't straighten up and it's very painful. And the fourth was altered muscle tissue called trigger points. In most jargon, when we're talking about these tender spots, but actually Dr. Krauss's concept was more than trigger points, because he recognized that the area of the muscle that was causing pain wasn't really in the muscle belly, in the tissue, but rather the ends of the muscle, where the muscle attaches to the tendon and the tendon attaches to the bone, is the most tender spot connected to that muscle, and that one needs to identify, therefore, the specific muscle, that finding a spot on your body isn't sufficient, because the pain isn't generated from that spot. It's rather generated from the ends of the muscle, so you must know which muscle you're in. So he made that distinction, and his results when he would inject the ends of the muscle were dramatic insofar as he wouldn't have to re-inject the muscle. So the standard of care now in terms of people who are doing, let's say, dry needling or trigger point injections, is to repeat the injections over and over again, quite often into the same muscle, whereas Dr. Krauss would be able to eliminate the pain by finding the muscle specifically and then going to the ends of the muscle and doing his protocol, which involved not only injections. And what he used was lidocaine just for comfort. It was the actual needle in the tissue that was doing the treatment. And following that, there's a 3-day protocol using neuromuscular electrical stimulation and exercises that were developed at Columbia University School of Medicine in the late 50s and early 60s. And these exercises were developed by studying 3,700 patients for 4.5 years. And then he came up with an exercise program that he then administered to 300,000 people at the YMCA.
Oh, wow.
And studied 12,000 of those patients and found there was an 80% success rate in diminishing or eliminating back pain. And in patients who had had surgery for their back and had pain afterwards, that the success rate was even higher, was 82%. So those exercises then became the standard exercise at the YMCA called the WISE way to a healthy back, Y'S, ways to a healthy back. And they were given for many years until someone decided to change it. And without going into what actually happened, this essentially died, the whole awareness of these exercises. But we use them as a routine part of the work that I'm doing. So when patients come in who have soft tissue pain, we diagnose one of these 4 mechanisms, you know, tension, which is very much what John Sarno would be speaking about, tension myositis. And now we know that there are mechanisms where if you are tense, it alters the neurons in your spinal cord and makes them more sensitive to input. It's called sensitization. So we also test them for weakness or stiffness using a test that Hans Krauss developed with his colleague Sonia Weber called the Krauss-Weber test. It's a very simple test. It takes about 2 minutes to implement the test. It gives you a lot of information. And then we also would be palpating for tenderness in muscles to identify the muscle. And what happened there was that I discovered that it wasn't specific enough, that many people have tender spots throughout their body that don't necessarily reflect where the pain originates. So you can have a tender point, and it may not be actually coming from there. It may be referred from another muscle. And it's almost impossible to know if you're pressing on a referral pattern or the actual pattern itself. I mean, the actual muscle itself causing it. Or is this just a muscle that is receiving information from another muscle? And all of this complication of where the pain originates was explained to me by Siegfried Mensah. So I really began to understand what was going on a cellular level and on a biochemical level through the work of Professor Mensah. And together, ultimately, we wrote a chapter together in a Harvard textbook that's Carol Warfield is one of the editors of the textbook, and it came out a couple of years ago on the pathophysiology of muscle pain. In that period of time, I was elected president of the American Academy of Pain Medicine and served on multiple committees and became interested in how diverse the various treatments are for the pains that people are of which they're complaining, and I started the outcomes movement in pain. So to try to come up with some assessment where we could measure if a certain treatment was superior to another treatment. And that's been a work in progress for the whole pain community. I mean, it was something that I began, and we did our best to finish it, but it's still happening, and now it's a major goal and mission of NIH to come up with parameters to measure what is successful outcomes in pain, and I've written a couple of chapters in neurosurgical textbooks on that. So I left Montefiore, went to Lenox Hill Hospital, and then I left Lenox Hill Hospital and went to NYU and became the director of muscle pain, clinical muscle pain there in the Department of Anesthesiology, and taught students who were fellows in the pain fellowship in the Department of Anesthesiology for 10 years or so. Then in the last 2 years, I moved to Cornell, where I have an appointment in neurological surgery and in anesthesiology. I'm the director of clinical muscle pain research, and I'm working together with my colleagues in anesthesia and neurosurgery to see how we can better define how soft tissue is an important element in patients who are coming in with run-of-the-mill back pain, and in also those patients who are found to have a surgical indication for their back pain but continue to have pain despite an apparently successful surgical intervention. Why are they still in pain? And quite often it's because their soft tissue that was not identified as a source of pain. Along with all of this, I was beginning to tell you about the problems in identifying a specific muscle by pressing on it, that I've discovered that I could stimulate the muscles with a tiny amount of electricity, and I could much more accurately identify which muscle is the source of pain. I'm now working on a next-generation device with the Cornell School of Engineering, the Meinig School of Biomedical Engineering, to develop an instrument where we can have a software program that would show the clinician what are the various muscles in the body in a region of which the patient complains of pain. For example, if you have shoulder pain, there's 16 muscles that cause pain in your shoulder. How do you know which muscle is causing the pain? You don't. By pressing, you don't really know. But when we stimulate it with a tiny amount of electricity, and that particular muscle or a couple of muscles are painful and the rest are not, then we assume that those muscles are sensitized and are indeed the pain generator. And when we treat those muscles, generally we can eliminate the pain in a region of the body. For example, in that case, it would be the shoulder. Mm-hmm. So I had a patient who was coming to see me for knee pain, and this was about 10 years ago or so, and she had 14 knee surgeries with the same orthopedic surgeon, and every time she had her knee surgery, she continued to have pain afterwards, and she was given more opioid. In this case, it was oxycodone. And when finally she was receiving something like 3,000 milligrams a day of oxycodone, which is a huge dose. So she was coming in periodically for pain medication, and she was functioning. So, you know, although it was a huge dose, and I wasn't entirely happy with it, but she was functioning. And so she had this extraordinary amount of medication, and she would come in periodically every month or so, and I'd renew the medication. And then she didn't show up one day, and I called her home, and her husband told me that she was hospitalized. And so what happened? Well, she had taken her medication, and then she had taken an anti-anxiety drug, and she fell asleep in the bathtub and almost drowned, and was admitted to the psychiatric unit of a hospital with a supposed suicide attempt.
Oh, dear.
So I said, oh, my God, that was terrible. And then so she was finally discharged, but she spent about 10 days there and then called me up, made an appointment, and she came in and I said, how are you doing? She said, I'm actually doing okay. I said, well, how's your knee pain? She said, I don't have any knee pain. I said, wow, really? I said, well, how much medication are you taking? She says, I'm not taking any medication. I said, what? You're on 3,000 milligrams a day. She says, yeah. So I said, well, what happened? So she said, well, there was this doctor who was there on the staff. His name was Hugo Franco. And he came in and he gave me some medication. Actually, gave me some naltrexone. And that helped me get off the medication so that I was able to go down to zero in 10 days. So I said, oh, would you have a lot of withdrawal? She said, no, I had no withdrawal. So this is impossible. I mean, it's like one of these, you know, events saying, oh, my God, how could this possibly be? So I said, oh, I'm going to call up Hugo Franco, and I did. We subsequently became friends, and he explained to me that he used naltrexone in ultra-low dose to detox patients. Mm-hmm. So much against what, you know, was on the internet, for example, or, you know, never give naltrexone when somebody was on opioids, it was actually, you know, it was great because he explained to me that it actually made the opioid stronger if you gave it in tiny, tiny doses, so that with a more potent effect, you could then start to decrease it because you were getting the same effect with lower doses, and you can just keep on going down, which he did. And so this was amazing for me. And then so I said, well, perhaps, you know, this could be useful with other patients. So I started to use it with patients where I wanted to facilitate a reduction in dosage or to get them off of opioids completely. And I was able to successfully use it in that fashion. But I still didn't quite understand how it was working until I went to a lecture by Linda Watkins. And she explained the whole phenomena of microglia and toll-like receptor number 4 and how the ultra-low-dose naltrexone wasn't blocking the mu receptor, and I hope that your audience, you know, understands that. So the mu receptor is where most of the action is when you're using an opioid, and in pain pathways, the mu is the major factor. But when you have chronic pain, microglia become very important, and the receptor that's that becomes stimulated on the microglia is toll-like receptor number 4. And when it's stimulated, it produces cytokines, and many of these cytokines are pro-inflammatory, meaning they cause inflammation, particularly interleukin-1 and interleukin-6. And that so these cytokines end up with giving you neuroinflammation, where you become, so if you have pain, it's sort of making more pain, pain on top of pain, and it also gives you what's called illness behavior or sickness behavior, where you feel you don't want to interact with other people, you feel sluggish, you want to just retreat, be alone, sleep a lot, and it's like a survival mechanism. So if there was true trauma or, you know, some injury in your body, the microglia respond by giving you these cytokines, or producing these cytokines that make you want to just rest a lot and not interact and not waste your energy, using all your energy for repair. So I started to understand that the whole issue of central sensitization, which is what happens when patients have persistent pain. So one of the issue is not all the mu receptor. We used to think it was that it was upregulation of the mu receptor, so that you know that you needed more medication because of the mu receptor, but actually that it was very much involved with activation of microglia, and that if we could suppress the microglia, we could suppress pain and actually reduce tolerance. That some of the tolerance was a function of activating microglia. So I started to, with that understanding, look for patients who had what I believed to be central sensitization, and it turned out that I had started to become very involved with patients with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And that's another long story how that happened, but just suffice it to say that I've been treating a large number of patients with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and the most common complaint in that population is fatigue and pain. And so when you examine them using my electrical instrument, they come up with anywhere from around 50 tender or sensitized muscles test positive. We're in a, when I say relatively normal population who just comes in, let's say with back pain, the average number of muscles is about 5. So they have 10 times the number of muscles that are sensitive to a small amount of electrical stimulation. And it would appear that they have central sensitization, and because they are sensitive to all stimuli, they do have a mood disorder, and quite often they have something else that fits in the whole picture, which is mast cell activation syndrome. So this is like another part of the puzzle, that the mast cells, which are cells in the body that respond to trauma and to infection, to any assault in the body or to a foreign body, that they sometimes become overactive. And the whole phenomena of overactive mast cells hasn't been recognized until quite recently. And it turns out that patients with hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, a large number of them have mast cell activation syndrome, which is not an abundant number of mast cells, not too many mast cells, but rather the normal number of mast cells, but the mast cells are overproducing the chemicals that they produce, and they can produce up to 200 different molecules. And you can get many different kinds of symptoms, but commonly would be skin sensitivity, rashes, environmental allergies, GI problems with constipation and or diarrhea, commonly known as irritable bowel syndrome, asthmatic-like problems, rapid heartbeat when you're getting up quickly called POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, sometimes orthostatic hypotension, migraine headaches. So we see this panoply of symptoms, and the mast cells also activate the microglia. So when you have hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, you're really exposed to the possibilities that you not only do you have microglial activation, but you have mast cell hyperactivity, and together they can synergize and give you more pain because the mast cell can stimulate the microglia. So in terms of my practice, you know, getting back to ultra-low-dose naltrexone, that I would say almost all the patients I see with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, I put on to ultra-low-dose naltrexone. It takes a while to titrate up because we know that the dosage of 4.5 milligrams for some patients is a total overdose, and they will not be able to tolerate that. And this was actually taught to me by Dr. Franco, my friend. So we start with 0.1 milligram per day, and we go up by 0.1 milligram every other day in a divided dose. So it's not one dose at night, but rather four-time-a-day dosing. So it would be 0.1, then 3 days, and on the third day, it would be 0.1 twice a day. On the fifth day or sixth day, it will be 0.1 three times a day. Then a couple of days after that, 0.1 four times a day. And then start again from the 0.1. So it would be 0.2, 0.1, 0.1, 0.1, then 0.2, 0.2, 0.1, 0.1, and going up like that until we get to maximum of somewhere between 5 and 6 milligrams a day as a maximum dose. So we have some patients who are... Their total daily dose is 0.15 milligrams a day, total daily dose. Mm-hmm. And we have other patients where the total dose is 6 milligrams a day. So what's the dose for ultra-low-dose naltrexone? There is no dose. It's completely idiosyncratic, meaning each patient has their dose, whatever mm-hmm. that may be. Mm-hmm. And so... I didn't stop talking for a long time, so I'm going to stop.
That is absolutely amazing, and you have wrapped it up in 30 minutes. We're going to have you come back and talk to us again, because I'm sure you'd only just got started in that 30 minutes. So I'd like to say thank you very much for having joined us today. Really do appreciate it.
My pleasure.
This show is sponsored by Dixon's Chemist, who are the experts in LDN and associated treatments in the UK. Dixon's Chemist are the most cost-effective for LDN in all forms within the UK and Europe, maintaining safety standards far in excess of what is required. Why would you choose to get your LDN from anywhere else? Call 0141 404 6545 today to speak to their LDN experts. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, L-I-N-D-A, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.